The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week,
when we did live gigs, we went along knowing that we'd have to sort of use the guitars as a weapon in defence or whatever.
I've been speaking to Chris and Cozy from Throbbing Gristle about the TG reissues series. P-Money, Russo and Vacationer all get reviewed by the team, which this week includes one of you listeners. Is it you? No, obviously it's not. You'd know if it was you. Find out in a few minutes. And we've got everything you need to know about dancehall in our next genre guide. That's all in this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello and welcome. We're going to start this week's programme with one of my all-time favourite bands, Throbbing Gristle. The pioneers of industrial music, they've remastered and reissued a load of their albums. It was a total pleasure and a thrill for me to meet Chris and Cozy from the band earlier this week. If my 17-year-old self was in any way able to know that one day his job would entail interviewing Throbbing Gristle, I don't know what he'd have done, actually. Cheered the fuck up for 5 minutes, maybe. That would have been enough, you know? It would be an understatement to say that Throbbing Gristle had an eventful life. Formed by Genesis P-Orig and his then partner, Cozy Fanny Tutti, in 1975, as an offshoot of their performance art collective, Coombe Transmissions, Throbbing Gristle were initially reviled. They managed to upset not just the kind of people who were upset by punk rock, but the kind of people who liked punk rock as well. But they went on to carve out their own niche, single-handedly inventing the genre of industrial music, proving to be a seminal influence on everything from Nine Inch Nails to Detroit techno. 35 years on, the albums they made in the 70s remain a provocative and hugely challenging listen. They reunited in the noughties to work on new material, but last year, video director Peter Christofferson, affectionately known as Sleazy, died in his sleep, and Genesis P-Orig left in the middle of a series of gigs, saying he hadn't quit, he'd just stopped touring. I could go on anyway. I asked them about all of this when we met, but first wanted to find out about the motivation for forming the band. What did they want to convey when they started TG?
We just wanted to do something, really, that we wanted to do, and mm-hmm. We didn't hear anything like we wanted to listen to at the time. It was all pretty mundane and just rock and roll and all the rest of it. And we were excited by experimental music anyway. Me and Jen, because we did performance work with contact mics, that kind of thing, and we used to use drums all the way along through Coombe. And then we met up with Chris, who was the means by which we could sort of build on that, really.
The sound that you arrive at, the initial sound of TG that you hear on Second Annual Report, which in some ways is the most sort of sonically coherent record that you make, I think. It's a remarkable kind of sound, in this sort of churning, relentless, grey noise that makes you feel quite queasy, without the lyrics. I mean, forget about that. How did you arrive at that? I mean, for years of listening to it, I can't work out what's making that noise. I don't know what instruments are involved.
At the beginning, we were swapping instruments, and I was trying Cozy was on drums initially, weren't you? You had a drum kit, but we got rid of that really quick. By the time we got to Second Annual Report, we were putting a lot of things through effects.
Was this stuff that you were building yourself?
Yeah, I was building lots of units and buying things and circuit bending them. It wasn't called circuit bending then. And almost everything we did went through some sort of an effect. Mm-hmm. It smeared the sound in some way. So it was hard to define who was doing what and, you know, where sounds were coming from, mm-hmm. and what sounds were, even.
You say that you're interested in the reaction or the way people reacted to the music. How did they react to the music when you first started taking it?
Violently.
Was it consistently negative and violent reaction?
Yeah. When we did live gigs, we went along knowing that we'd have to sort of use the guitars as a weapon in defence or whatever, you know, or sort of put our arms up and sort of like bounce off bottles and things.
In some ways, I feel sorry for those early audiences, because when you go out and buy a ticket for like Stockhouse or something, you know you're going to go and see something difficult. But in those days, people, they had no idea who Throbbing Gristle were.
Yeah.
And we start doing this experimental stuff and there's no rhythms, you know, nothing they can hook onto. In a way, I can understand people getting violent, or most people would probably just walk out, but in those days they threw things at us or attacked
us. The Skinheads, that gig we did,
they jumped on the stage.
Thought
they could do it better.
Yeah. And so I remember I walked off the stage and went and sat in the audience, put my feet up on the table. I said, well, go on then, do better than we did. You know, you don't know what you're doing, do you?
But it was all just fuck off.
Yeah. And then when they'd done like 5 or 6 minutes and got fed up with that, I said, have you finished? Can we carry on now? And so they came back and, all right. It's strange, but by the time we got acceptance,
acceptance.
We didn't like the acceptance.
I think the Lyceum, we played at the Lyceum, just it was sold out, and the Lyceum's pretty big.
Mm, mm.
And it was a good bill. It was Cabaret Voltaire and Clock DJ and us and Sev. And by then, we thought, no, this isn't that.
Second annual report with United, which is, you know, kind of a pop single, really. I mean, it's got a kind of tune, and, you know, presumably that was the intention, was to keep flipping people's expectations.
Well, it wasn't that so much as, which is always good to do anyway. It was also the fact that we were interested in how those songs were structured, mm-hmm. especially Chris, mm-hmm. you know, and we had an interest in that kind of music, and kitsch music and ABBA and... Mm-hmm. It's just a sort of approach of having the freedom to do what you fancy doing and not getting stuck in a rut.
Mm-hmm. It's like the second time we reformed TG, I came up with this thing that we've got to confound people's expectations, although Jen is a bit of a stick in the mud and we wanted to keep giving them the same old stuff.
Was that initially your intention, was not to do sort of a Hamburger Lady and things like that?
No, you know? I said at the beginning, if we're going to regroup, mm-hmm. what's the point of just... rehashing and doing greatest hits, mm-hmm. we should actually do something together new, you know.
The three of us, me and Cozy and Sleazy, wanted to be quite experimental, mm-hmm. take it even further. Mm-hmm. But Jen was very reluctant, Jen's weird because he initially wanted to do the old stuff, mm-hmm. because he felt, you know, comfortable doing
sure.
that, and he knew what he was doing. And then he got sick of doing that and he wanted to do experimental stuff, which we were happy with, but... He experimentally, he's not very good with TG. He seemed to have run out of ideas, so that's when it started to fall apart a bit.
You presented yourself as the antithesis of a traditional rock band. Where did that idea come to present yourself as effectively like a company or a manufacturing industry?
Mischief.
I think it was Sleazy's concept, wasn't it? He came up with the concept of the business plan, and we just went with it.
But he didn't do any of the office work, that's the thing. He's great with the ideas, but he didn't do the work behind
it. Doing all that?
You were completely independent as a band. You were a completely independent label. You had your own channels of communication with your audience. Was that your intention from the start, or did it just fall into that way? Did you realise this is not something that's ever going to get signed by a record label?
A bit of both. If we'd had the money, we would have kept it completely independent, but we had to have some help with the production cost, but it got too big and we couldn't, could we? We were even delivering the albums. We got them from the factory, mm-hmm. we got hired a van and we sent them to the shops. We drove around all the shops.
Jesus. Did a record label ever approach you?
Virgin was the first.
Really?
Yeah, mm. First and last. We all sat down and they put this deal on the table and we just laughed.
Did you ever have any intention of signing with them?
No.
Not really, no. And they had all these conditions and it was just like ludicrous.
What kind of conditions were there? I mean,
the usual ones, you know, sign you for 20 years.
Oh, right.
We'd have all the publishing
right.
And, okay. You know, we'd get 10%.
Percentage of this and that. But, I mean, by then we knew what all the money...
How it
worked. Yeah, totally. And they didn't know that we did.
A lot of people talk about the kind of almost physical effect that Throbbing Gristle's music had on audiences, particularly live. What effect did it have on you? Because you were listening to it night after night.
We used to do experiments in the studio in Hackney with subsonics. The first time we bought bass bins and things, we spent weeks doing experiments to see how low and how loud we could get the volume before we took it to an audience. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting because we had to have someone stood by the kill switch because sometimes it would make us go dizzy and you'd get all sorts of weird sort of sensations.
You get tunnel vision and then your stomach starts going.
And we had someone there ready to turn it off. So there was the physicality of it, which you only ever get at a TG gig. You don't get it on the record at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember standing by the switch and saying, look at my trousers.
They were just
flapping like mad. They said, turn it off.
Bloody Chest Funk Greats is an interesting album because although the title is kind of mocking in a way, it's also the sort of TG record that seems most obviously in love with kind of club music and disco and things. It's got Hot on the Heels of Love on it, which is basically an acid house track, you know, which is a fair... I mean, were you surprised when you heard acid house? Because did you sort of think this sounds almost exactly like what we were doing in 1980, 81?
I remember Jeff from Coil ringing me up and saying... You could do all this standing on your head. You could make a fortune. Why aren't you doing it? They're rubbish at it.
But we've said, moved on.
We've moved
know.
On. That was 10 was years that, ago.
You know, we've, yeah, been there, done that. You know.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I was doing a lot of stripping at the time. So mm-hmm. there was all that going on. Donna mm-hmm. Summer and all
so that's
that going
in the background
on.
Of what were
yeah.
you? The other thing that I love about TG is no matter how extreme and reviled your ideas seemed at the time, almost every single one of them ultimately ended up being absorbed into the mainstream of rock music. Did that surprise you? Did that horrify you? Did that all...
It horrified Sleazy. It really used to piss him off.
Yeah.
That people would run with these ideas that we had and, mm-hmm. you know, they'd be really successful at it.
But then he sort of accepted it after a while because yeah. he said, you know, the animal is just too quick and swift to steal and run away. You know?
Yeah.
So you've got to accept it.
I don't mind it. If someone picks up an idea that we had and they can do it better. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that, you know.
Yeah, we want to pick up an idea and absolutely trash it.
Yeah, that's different, yeah.
TG came to an end basically because of the interpersonal relationships yeah. in the band and that you broke yeah. up with Jed and you two got together. Had that not happened, could it have carried on forever artistically, or was it running out of steam? Were you, I mean, have you ever sort of thought, well, you know, there was more in it than that?
I think it would have gone in another direction completely because yeah. mm-hmm. we had ideas of what we were going to do, but personal issues and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think some of the ideas that Jen had for PTV and Sleazy had for Coil, they would have probably got amalgamated into some new version of TG
sure.
if we'd carried on. Yeah, it's hard to say, possibly.
Tell me about the final album, Desert Shore. How close to finishing it? Should I not ask?
Well, let's put it this way. We have all the vocals recorded,
right?
All of them. All the guest vocalists have done their parts, mm-hmm. and all that's done. But
what guest vocalists are on?
We can't say. We've asked them not to talk about it, so
okay,
we can't really talk about it. But I think people will be surprised. I mean, there are a couple of vocalists on it, and people will think, yeah, that's, you know, that makes sense. So we're really pleased with that aspect. But what happened when Jen walked out on us? Cozy Sleazy and I had this meeting, and we decided to take the album in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And Sleazy just he wanted to take it off somewhere else, and unfortunately, he died before we could realise that, you mm-hmm. know. So we've got all his files that he was working on at the time mm-hmm. and some equipment that he was using that he got specially to do it. And we have these vocalists from this list that we made of guest vocalists. And now we've just got to put all that together. So we're just trying
yeah,
to figure out
he's left me and Chris really
that.
Busy for a couple of years, you know. he's signed off and he's left us with a piece of equipment he didn't know what the hell to do with. Chris has got to learn how to use it.
Because before he died, he was ringing me up and emailing me and said, how do I do this? You know, he's ordered this piece of gear that cost a lot. It's like 10 grand for this piece of gear.
Chris said, I told you not to buy it.
I told you not to buy it. And he said, how do I do, what do I do with it? So now I've got to figure that out and figure out how to incorporate it into the album. Well, we would have started it a lot earlier, but we had to do the remastering. We've had to do everything. Bastard, what did he go
How do you go about remastering? Because Second Annual Report was largely recorded on a mono cassette recorder, yeah?
Well, it was mono and we stereoed it up.
Right.
How
does one go about digitally remastering something recorded that's so lo-fi to start off
we
with?
We were lucky because a few years ago when we were mutual with EMI, they offered to transfer everything we had in our archive mm-hmm. and they had to bake the tapes to do this. It's a weird technique where they bake the tapes in an oven, run them through a machine, and they can only do it once because once they've done it you can't use the tapes again.
Right.
And then they extract all the information from the tape, and then we had these digital clones of the original, and then listening to those compared to the versions that were actually released, they sounded incredible mm-hmm. and you could hear, you know, all the errors and clicks and distortion even more.
Right.
So I've gone through and I've taken out any weird bits and weird edits. Mm. And so there's not a lot of remastering that actually went on. Because they're iconic albums,
yeah.
I wanted to keep them pretty much as they were.
Sure.
So I've just gone through and cleaned up, topped and tailed. No EQing, no compression, nothing like that. And they sound brilliant.
That's Throbbing Gristle, industrial music for industrial people. And their reissues are available to buy now. Albums, you know, I mean, they're not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but they're records that I think everybody should hear at least once. So go out and get them. Okay, let's listen to some new tunes. Three tracks to review. I'm joined in the studio by Kieran Yates. How have you been, Kieran?
Fine, thank you. Hello.
Published author since we last met.
Yep.
Written a book, not even about music. Tell us all about it, please.
Well, I co-wrote it with a fantastic author called Nikesh Shukla, and we were approached by Random House to sort of comment on all the events that had happened post-riot summer with young people. And I think that there was just so much written sort of damning that demographic and, you know, from various commentators and a lot of right-wing media that we really wanted to just give a real idea of what was happening on the underground and, you know, give sort of those voices the respect that they're due. Yeah,
that sounds wicked. You wrote it incredibly quickly.
Yeah, 5 weeks.
Wow, that's amazing. It takes me 5 weeks to write like an album.
Still got hand cramp.
And it is called?
Generation Vexed.
It is available on, as a download.
Yeah, so it's out as an ebook, and it's on Amazon, iTunes, Waterstones.com and Random House.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, get it.
Wow, yeah, go and buy it.
Alexis.
Amazing. No, I will do. No, I'm really keen to read it. And you know,
it's nice £3.74.
Is that all it is?
Well, can you afford that? Or?
I don't have anything to read it on. Can you read it on iPhone?
No, you can just download it to your laptop.
Oh, right, yeah, good. Now, that's exciting. Generation Vexed, Random House ebook. That's very, very exciting. Tell you what's also exciting. Joining Kieran and myself to review this week's tracks, not a journalist, but one of our regular blog commentators, Dave Portivo. He's on the phone. Hello, Dave.
Hello. But I've got to shatter the illusion. I am actually a journalist as well.
What?
Yeah.
where are you a journalist? Who do you write for? Is it under the name Dave Portivo?
No, I'm under the name David Hayter, my actual name, surprisingly. And I write for loads of places, including Lily Allen's record label, Itno. I'm a content writer for their blog site.
Oh, well, there you go. This explains, perhaps it doesn't, explains the quality of your posts on the Guardian
thank
blog.
You.
This probably will mean that you can't really leave a comment on this week's show, which is a shame. It'll be bereft without one of your things. What kind of music do you like, Dave? What introduce yourself for the benefit of those who haven't come across your likes and dislikes.
I'm pretty much an omnivore when it comes to music. I listen to a bit of everything. That sounds terribly vague, but if I had to choose my primary interest, it's kind of Californian indie stuff like Girls. But you know, I listen to hip hop. I listen to black metal as well. I listen to tons of odd electronica. I go to everything. So I'm
cool. Pretty. Well, look, we will hear your track in a moment, but we'll start off this week with my choice. I've stashed some cash. That's Russo and Laters I'm Off. It's got an appearance by Scruffizer. Scruffizer?
Scruffizer.
Oh, thank you, my urban consultant here. As you can gather, you know, I don't know an enormous amount about Russo. I came across the video this week. The reason I've picked it, slightly long story, is that also this week I reviewed the album by Cher Lloyd, which is rubbish.
Mm.
And it doesn't need to be rubbish. That's the thing that's annoying about it. It strikes me that this is what the Cher Lloyd album should sound like, if the people around her had any sense, rather than this kind of boring mishmash of, very confused, boring mishmash of you know, a song that sounds a bit like Umbrella, a song that sounds exactly like Katie on a Mission, to the extent that I wouldn't be surprised if they sued them, it sounds so much like Katie on a Mission. You know, it's just like chucking ideas, styles at a woman, you know, a fairly sort of intriguing, feisty character in the hope that they'll stick. And I thought, wow, if they'd made a record like this, happy days. Everyone would think it's amazing. It's got a great chorus, like thunderous electronic din going on in the background. It's laden with attitude. You get some sense of the singer's character, which is the other thing that's wrong with the Cher Lloyd album, is that you get no sense. It could have been by me, frankly, the Cher Lloyd album. It doesn't, you know, you get no sense of the singer's character. So it was just a study of contrasts. So that's why I brought it in. Kieran.
Yep. I think that that's an interesting point you make about the Cher Lloyd album, because, you know, it's almost like this weird commercial idea of what it means to be a young female in the music industry today. And then it just perpetuates this weird view that you have to sound bubblegum and you can't be feisty and you can't have something real to say and you can't have a bit of edge to you. This almost very young and very regressive idea of what it means to be a young female has just been mass assimilated and sold back to us, and it doesn't quite work. And then now and again you get people like Rousseau here that makes you feel like, actually this is something that I hear when you're out roving. I talk to girls like this. And, you know, these are kind of young women that have strong voices. You know, even people like Stushy, which are a girl group, that have been sort of around the underground at the moment. You know, they talk, you know, really candidly about sex and, you know, things like that in you know, in a way that you can relate to. And I think that people can't relate to Cher Lloyd because it doesn't sound like your peers, you know. And I think
it doesn't sound like her. That's the thing. That's the problem. I thought, are you, I mean, above and beyond it being better than Cher Lloyd, which is very much damning a record with fame praise, do you like the track?
Yep, I like it. I think that it's got that sort of fun and it's powerful. And it's a little bit more interesting. You know, it's not a kind of a straight, you know, female grime MC or something. A beat. It's really interesting. It's got that almost like trip hoppy sound within it. And I think it's, I really like it.
Dave, how do you feel about that track?
I absolutely love this track, I have to say. It's kind of an odd thing to say, but it kind of reminded me of being in school in an odd way, kind of, has that kind of chorus that a friend would come up with and think it's the best line ever and say, just put it down, but never actually would. And it has that kind of real charm, which is nice. And it also kind of reminds me of, oddly, 2006, 2007, kind of the UK kind of urban-y grime scene from that period when it kind of felt like there was going to be a big commercial breakthrough.
Yeah.
And it ended up being, well, the Calvin Harris and Dizzy Rascal thing.
Absolutely,
my Rolex. And this is what I, at the time, thought was just around the corner and never came.
Mm.
And I'm really glad to hear it now. It sounds really... It's got that kind of cluttered beat, and I'm glad it doesn't lurch and click. It's nice.
No, it's interesting. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think there's a sense that the what seemed this sort of insurmountable barrier that existed between grime and making a pop record, you know, which never really got, everyone thought was going to at some point somebody Lethal Bizzle or somebody like that was going to resolve it, and it never really did get resolved. I hadn't thought about it in that sense. There you go.
Yeah, people like Lisa Mafia and Miss Dynamite were the beginning of something, and then it sort of fizzled out, especially with female voices.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think this is good. I don't think that Rousseau is the voice of the moment.
But
I do think that, it's a little bit refreshing to hear something other than what we've been hearing.
Wicked. Well, look, that's on her new mixtape, which is available now. It's free to download. It's out on its own in February. Don't know how much it's going to sell if it's free to download now, but there you go. That's the modern economics of the music industry for you. Okay, our next track is from Dave. Right, that's Vacationer and Gone, the choice of Dave Portivo, one of our regular blog commenters, who's joining in this week. Dave, I know nothing about Vacationer. Tell me about them, please.
Well, that's probably because no one really knows anything about them.
Hey.
This is the second ever song they've put together.
Wow.
They're being intentionally mysterious and not saying who they are or where exactly they're from. We think it's a band, but some people suggest it's just one guy.
Wow.
And they were really hyped coming out of CMJ Festival that happened last week in New York. So I decided to check it out. And basically, when I heard the hype that it was all chill wave, dream pop, washed out, neon Indian, I was kind of actually dreading listening to it, to be honest. I was like,
there's a lot of that stuff about, isn't there?
Yeah, I just couldn't stomach listening to another song. And then when I put it on and listened to it objectively, it pretty much is a checklist of everything stereotypical of that genre and sound. But I actually just really liked it. I'm a sucker for that kind of melody and that kind of vocal. And I think the less attention you pay to it, the better. It's meant to float around the middle ground and be kind of ethereal and nice.
Mm. Mm.
And yeah, just kind of relax your brain and drift off. Don't. I think you can pick it to pieces if you focus on it too much.
Now, how are they sort of disseminating this music if they're being mysterious and this is only the second track they've put out? How do you get hold of it?
Well, basically, it just pops up on their SoundCloud page. They're just they're not great at hyping their own music. I think they're still unsigned. This is the second one they've put up, and it's just basically there if you find it. It's free to download, but it's
And the performance at CMJ. I mean, you said there was a lot of hype around the performance at CMJ. Did they play live? What I mean, what, why, where did the hype come from?
Well, basically, I was just this is completely through the blogosphere, but they played live, and apparently they did play with a band, but they were hit with some technical glitches. But apparently, when they got it right, it was just gorgeous, and there's been so many bloggers saying how great they are, but there have also been some really terrible newspaper articles. I heard them described as New Soul, which I can't quite...
New Soul?
Yeah, that was in a New York paper. It was kind of really odd.
That's bizarre. I really liked it. I actually didn't think of it as much in that chill wave kind of vein.
Their previous song is more...
Yeah, this seems to be a bit less sort of smeared sounding than someone like Washed Out. You know, it didn't have that kind of lo-fi-ish kind of retro feel. It's just struck me as a really good song. Kieran?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I don't know whether this is a compliment or not, because I don't think the Magic Numbers are really heralded as musical mavericks. But it reminded me a little bit of that. It sort of had.
I can see the sunshiny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that sort of aspect of that. Yeah, I felt that a little bit, and I'm glad that you said that it doesn't really. You don't need to focus too much of attention of it. Just sort of let it wash over you, because I got that feeling from it. Sort of to me. It sounds a bit like background music, but yeah, it's quite nice.
It's good. It's good that we've had something a bit more. Bearing in mind that the first half of the show is consumed by Throbbing Gristle, I think it's probably as well that we have a bit of music on there that's a touch of turn off your mind, relax and float downstream. So we presume we don't know whether they're signed. We know there's these two songs out. We don't know who they are. Do we know who they are? I mean, is there a name floating about this lead guy?
They just. Say Vacationer, and they call themselves New Hula, whatever that means.
New Hula, amazing.
I'm hoping it's unironic, the whole band, but oh, I should have said they're a concept band about taking you on vacation through sound.
Which
almost sent me running away.
I was going to say, yeah, they're doing themselves no favours, Vacationer. They want to think about how they're pitching their music a little bit, I think. I really liked it. Okay, so it's up on their SoundCloud page. I'm sure if you do a Google search, you will be able to find them. Our last track is Kieran's Choice. I'm cool when it comes to the enemy, cause I'm a draw side levitator. I dare an MC try touch this one punch, bust lip. Man won't admit that I'm sick, cause human are blonde, dumb chicks. My light brownie said come quick, cause I get wet with one trick and five steps. Unzip, now you're like shit. I'm pissed, I can't believe he done this. Easy peasy, I show you magic and double your CD with one disc, one mic, one rave, one snare, one kick. This lyrical drug has one kick that'll make you walk home with one kick. Grammy originator. Well, he certainly sounds like a very vigorous young gentleman. That's P Money. Yeah. Clip. No, it's not called Clip. That's what it just says here. Clip. Sorry. The devastating professionalism of the Guardian podcast in full effect here, ladies and gentlemen. That's Originator by P Money. Yeah, I thought Clip. You know, like Clip.
Yeah, you know, I got it.
Clip in your gun, but I got it wrong. Anyway, P Money, Originator. Kieran, tell us about P Money. Tell us why you brought this track and explain yourself, please.
Okay, his name is P Money. He's a grime MC from South London. He is massively, massively respected sort of on the grime scene, on the dubstep scene. He's done a lot of dubstep collaborations with people like Plastician and True Tiger, who he did his last massive single with, and he's currently touring with Katie B. He's really, really infamous. He's sort of
when you say he's infamous, that is just for his lyrical skills.
Well, yeah, and I mean, this year he had a clash with another grime heavyweight called Getz, formerly known as Ghetto, and beat him, I'd say.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and you know, just things like that lyrically, really, really brilliant, really got his finger on the pulse, understanding how to kind of spit lyrics over dubstep beats and grime beats. And all that kind of thing, which is really, really, really good. I mean, his single that he had earlier in the year called Slang Like This was a massive breakthrough moment, and it got a little bit of mainstream love. And yeah, I think he's brilliant. I could sort of go on and on about him for ages.
Dave, what did you make of P Money?
Well, I actually saw him live last Tuesday.
Excellent. This is what we like to hear.
I actually thought he was better on record than live, to be honest.
Okay.
He did the whole thing where he just rapped over basically every popular song imaginable that's in the charts right now.
Right.
Which wasn't so great. And live, he like he does that thing where he gets really ahead of the beat and is kind of spitting out everything. Whereas I actually liked on this track that he kind of, he didn't get ahead of anything. He was kind of composed and he lets the punchlines flow. But I did find him really, really corny, I have to say.
Corny?
What?
Some of the some of the punchlines are really good, but I don't know, Twitter and pita bread. I mean,
I think it's funny.
I like the idea that Dave seems to be suggesting here, that this record represents P Money, you know, a slightly laid back version of what he normally does.
Not laid back. I just mean as in, he's aggressive, but he actually delivers everything clearly and
It's always a problem with, I mean, this is obviously not the although I was actually going to mention Professor Green in a slightly different context. Yeah. I went to see Professor Green last night. I went to review him. And, you know, crap sound mix, couldn't hear his vocals. Mm-hmm. You know, waste of time. Really? Yeah, not his fault. But, you know, I was watching, there's always a problem with live hip hop. There's always something like this. You know what I mean? It takes is a bad sound mix, and suddenly the evening is like.
But I think even if you've got a good flow, you can spit a cappella on the mic and it can still sound great.
No, absolutely.
And I think that actually Professor Green is still quite good at that. I see what you're saying. But
no, I think it wasn't a criticism of his live show. It wasn't a criticism of his music. It was a criticism of the fact that you couldn't really hear him.
You know,
that was it.
Okay,
The backing vocalist was louder than he was and blah, 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 blah. And clearly the guy is very serious about his lyrics. And, you know, at one point he said, oh, you know. And also he's really pop crowd. Well, guys at number one.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So there were a lot of people screaming and stuff, which he seemed to be quite into.
Knickers on stage.
It wasn't quite knickers on stage, but, you know, it had that vibe. But at one point he went, you know, I just want you to do one thing for the next three minutes and 33 seconds, and that's listen. And nobody fucking listened. But you couldn't have heard him anyway, so, you know. But it's interesting, he seems to be the first guy that's broken ranks among that kind of pop rapper crowd and gone, actually, this has all gone a bit too far, and it's all a bit too commercial, and people are making records, you know what I mean, specifically with the intention of getting in the charts, and that is not a good thing. And I think it's very nice in these times, you know. And he's got a lot of respect for like Wretch and people like that. But I mean, I don't want to say it was directed at Example, but it seemed to be talking about Example when he said that. Anyway, but sorry, Dave. What context did you say you saw him in? Did you say he was supporting someone?
Yeah, supporting KTB.
Did he go down all right? I mean, I know you had reservations about it personally. Was the crowd into it?
Or? Oh, the crowd were really into it. But again, that was kind of. He was using, like, Flux Pavilion's I Can't Stop, like, every other beat, basically. So the kind of crowd were going to love it regardless. He was really good at getting everyone hyped up, but I don't think anyone would have left thinking
P-Money's
anything in his own right.
Okay. Well, that's good. Interesting.
Sorry, and that's from the Beat the Tune mixtape.
So. Oh, sorry, yes. Yep. So wait, you can get this. Is this downloadable? Is this?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. Thank you very much for taking part this week, Dave. We will wait with interest to see what your fellow commenters have to say about your choice. Not about you, of course, about your choice this week. You can do that. You can comment on Dave's choice, Kieran's choice, and indeed my choice, or indeed anything else about the show, at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tweet at musicweeklypod. Next up, some recommendations from the dance hall that you need to know about.
Hi, this is Gabriel. I run The Heatwave. We're a movement of DJs and artists. We DJ all around the world, run events. We do a radio show on Rinse FM every week, and it's all about theheatwave.co.uk. The first tune I'm going to talk about today is Hold You by Egyptian. Behind them try and me no care. They take it anytime, anywhere. In that square, so me no care. Long as a woman, I will be there. Hold You's been the biggest tune in dancehall for like the last 18 months or so. We play it out everywhere we go, all the gigs we play around the world, and it's always one of the biggest reactions, like crazy sing-alongs, everyone knows the words. And it's been amazing watching its popularity grow. Like when we first started playing it, no one really knew it. And it, like, people were kind of like, what's this? Because it hooks you. I just think the sound of it is kind of cheap. It sounds really badly made, but there's a kind of beauty in the way he sings and in the piano as well. That I think is really nice and kind of catches your ear really quickly. I think it would have been a massive chart hit if it had been picked up by a major label, but it just didn't really get dealt with in the right way, I think, by the right record label.
Yeah.
is their destiny.
Following on from Gyptian, the next tune is the latest single from Mavado. It's called Settle Down.
Settle down, you get ready. In the sister, you are drive me crazy. The way you whine, you amaze me. In the take a bag of man like the Navy.
This is a new single from Mavado. It's only been out a couple months, but already it's starting to look like it could be as big a hit as Hold You. When we've been playing it in raves recently, the audience have been reacting in the same kind of way. It's got that sing-along quality, and also it's a love song that's still got that kind of cheeky sexual innuendos in there, which I think people really relate to.
Me lace her up like a hair knife. She took a ride on the big bike. She must be things that the things like. Y'all ball out like lightning, the things strike.
So Mavado's coming to the UK in December, and supporting him on the tour is going to be Stylo G, one of the biggest dancehall artists in the UK. This next one is a tune from him called Call Me a Yardie.
Heat wave, all our meds, we now sniff Charlie. So them have to big up the legend, Bob Marley. Blackberry phone anytime, y'all call we. Same so we bossy, Roberto Cavalli. Call me a Yardie, call me a Yardie. Heat wave, blood bends, and be Mazan Hardy. Call me a Yardie, call me a Yardie. Heat wave, blood bends, and be Mazan Hardy.
So that's Stylo G's breakthrough hit, Call Me a Yardie, which has been getting a lot of airplay, not just in the UK, but in the US, Canada, Jamaica, around the world. And it's something that has really kind of helped him come through as the biggest artist in UK bashment right now, which I think is shown by the fact that he's supporting Mavado on his UK dates. That's a really big step for him, and it will be really good to show him to a new audience and to people that know about Jamaican dancehall, but maybe don't know about how good the UK artists are. We had Stylo G on our radio show on Rinse FM recently performing and talking about his dad, who's a dancehall artist, and about moving to Jamaica and the links between UK music and Jamaican music. And I think what he's doing at the moment is really important for the kind of growth of Jamaican music in the UK. This next one is another one from a UK artist. This is Call My Phone by Stush from South London. Dancehall in the UK is stronger right now than it's been at any time in the last 10 or 15 years, and Stush is a really good example of this. This is produced by a UK producer as well, Curtis Lynch. And funnily enough, the tune was also written at a big stage show back in June that had people like Wiley, Glamour Kid, General Levy, Skibbadee, a load of old artists and new artists coming together and performing on dancehall rhythms and kind of, in a way, like reinvigorating the dancehall scene in the UK. And in the tune, you can hear Stush talking about that event and talking about Mr. Williams and General Levy and Stylo G. And after the event, everyone was like trying to get a phone number, which is why this tune's called Call My Phone. It's about everyone calling her phone. And mostly it was about people trying to book her, trying to do tunes with her. But also, I think certain artists were trying to get it for other reasons, which is something she references in the tune. This one's a new tune from Mr. Vegas called Brock It Down. The thing I love about Brock It Down is it's just got so much energy. It's very, very rowdy. When you play this in a rave, it makes people go mad. And like, you can kind of hear that when you just listen to the tune, but really to experience it, you've got to see it in a party. You've got to see people the way people react to it. Last time I played this last week, people were banging on the walls, blowing horns, blowing whistles, and it got started again about, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. It's a lot faster than traditional dancehall. It's got elements of soca and funky house in there, and you can hear the way, I don't think it's sampled, but the way Mr. Vegas sings it, it's like he's doing it as if he's been sampled by like a house or dance music producer. So like the same phrase being repeated over and over again, getting faster and faster in a kind of build up like a techno song. This thing that has been going on in London for a while with dancehall and bashment is, I think, really blowing up around the UK on a national scale. And it's exciting. It's kind of crazy when you see it in a club.
lock it down. Oh, any real good as them step forward and whine. Every good body girl just broke out cause of your time. Man, I promise with the world anytime them see all your whine.
That's Gabriel from Heatwave. You can find out more about them at theheatwave.co.uk. You love them.
So
you,
good.
Yeah?
Brilliant. One of the best shows on Rinse.
Wow. Okay, there you go. Highly recommended. That's all for today. Back next week as always. Don't forget to tweet us or leave a comment. Links are at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Thanks for coming in, Kieran.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for asking.
Thanks to Dave for being on earlier as well, and thanks to you for listening. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme was produced by Scott Cawley.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.